Hello, everybody.
Hey.
You hear that jazzy music? Welcome to Plaid Skirts and Basic Black, the podcast that makes Shannon just dance on the spot.
Thank you.
Jazar, Susan Mars for that. Yes, I'm your host, your co-host, Marcia.
And I'm Shannon.
And we're super excited to talk to you about pop culture, Catholicness, Blackness, awesomeness. And this week we're going to be talking about Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, the Sydney Poitier Classic, with also Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy.
They're also excellent.
Awesome. So, I'm excited to be back today. Just recording. I'm glad that we're back in the swing of things. Season three. Mm-hmm. So, Shannon, it is dreary outside a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it is for you, but for us, it's
same.
Bit dreary. So, other than the actual weather, how's the weather in your neck of the woods?
Oh, it's pretty sunny. Pretty sunny and clear and bright. I actually have a full weekend off for the first time in a long time. I'm not working on a Sunday, which is rare. For those of you who may be new to the show, I'm work full-time at a church, so we do a lot of things on Sunday generally. So it's very exciting to have a Sunday off. And then we are going to visit my sister-in-law for her birthday, along with my mother-in-law and father-in-law. I'm my brother-in-law, who's my sister-in-law's husband, for Mother's Day as well. So the kids are super excited because they get to like stay in a hotel and go in a pool and do a long road trip. Although they were not too pleased with the length of the road trip because it's about a 4-hour drive. And they were like, can we have every movie ever made? We need to watch all of it. And we need video games and books and everything. And I'm like, okay, the drive to our parents' house, their grandparents, is only like 3 hours. It's not that much longer, but that's 4 hours. Oh my gosh. Gonna be the end of the world.
That is hilarious.
So just really looking forward to that, and like we're kind of in planning mode in the house and everything, and so just a great week. Awesome. How about you, Marcia?
So I'm trying to think though. I mean, I've been it's like pretty dreary. And like, not horribly, but I'm just so tired all the time, and I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm done being off work. Mm-hmm. So as you know, who are all new to the podcast, I work in a residential facility. So I work with and raise 10 teenage boys along with my coworkers. I have two coworkers, Kyle and Phil. Shout out to Kyle and Phil. So I'm missing my boys because I'm here in the home with them, and you know, I can see them and interact with them, but because I am off duty, on medical leave, like there's restrictions to my interactions and things like that. Like I can come out and have a meal with them and stuff, but like I miss being a part of their every day and their day to day. It's just been frustrating lately because this is a stressful time of year for them because summer's coming up and a lot of them go home for the summer. Even though they're excited to go home, they're a little bit nervous because not all of them come from great homes. Mm-hmm. And so this is the time of year where they're excited to be just done with all of our rules and the strictness, but they're also like nervous. Like, am I going to get what I need? Some kids are like, are we going to eat? Are we going to do this? Or, you know? Yeah. And this is the time I usually talk with them and be like, you can come back at any point during the summer, you know? And like, I've told kids before, and I go, if you're just going to come back for like 2 weeks, just come back, you know, like, so they're kind of, I know they're having a hard time, and I'm like, I just need to be back on duty so that, you know, I can interact with them. And I ran to someone today that was like, oh my gosh, I bet your boys are missing you. And I go, oh yeah, they tell me all the time. And they go, oh, well, we're talking about Phil and Kyle. Like my coworkers. And I was like, oh yes, my work husbands, they're definitely missing me. And I go, there are 12 men in that house that miss me and follow me. I'm like Jesus to them. but I mean, so it's a little bit like, whoa, you know, but it's okay. I have another week. By the time this comes out, it will only be like 3 days. So yeah, I just, I'm just ramped and ready for this to be over. So, so yeah. Okay. So, the movie this we saw this week was Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. I first heard about this movie when I was maybe in fifth or sixth grade because of Doogie Howser. There was a Doogie Howser episode where they made a reference to this movie because Doogie was inviting his black friend over for dinner. And who ended up working at the hospital, and he's like, "Hey mom, hey dad, guess who's coming to dinner?" And then my mom laughed so hard at it, and my aunt laughed so hard, and I was like, "Why is that funny?" I'm like, "Oh, because this guy previously was like not a good guy." And I was like, "Why is it funny? He wasn't a good guy. I'm sure he's nervous." My mom's like, "Oh no, there's a movie." And I was like, "Oh, okay, you know, whatever." And then I finally saw it in English class in college. I want to say my junior or senior year, probably one of my American lit classes, or so I was an English major, so I'm sure it was some concentrated literature class, you know, and we watched it and I was like, huh. So yeah, and I did enjoy it, and sadly then I'm like, this is not much different than how things are now, like, you know, in the 90s still. It was still like that. So what was your first experience with this movie, Shannon?
I'm 90% certain that I watched this with either my mom or my dad at some point in time when I was young, because I remember watching it when I was probably like around 10 or so, maybe a little earlier, maybe a little later, but young enough that I didn't quite understand everything that was happening, but old enough to really understand what was going on. And I really liked it because, as all of you know, I'm biracial, and so I felt like this was a movie that helped me understand sort of what it was like for my parents. Even though they got married in the 80s, it wasn't quite as big of a deal as it was in the 60s when this movie was filmed, and we'll kind of get into some of that later, I'm sure, but it really was a moment where I could kind of understand how other people saw my parents, and why they would talk to us so much about race. It was never negative, my parents talking about race, but like that understanding of what it meant for some people to be able to make that decision. And this movie would have been something that, you know, my parents would have seen when they were teenagers. So again, it wasn't like this is like their reality, but it's something that paved the way for them to be able to get married. And it wasn't such a big deal, even though it certainly was still a big deal. And I'll talk about that further, I'm sure. So we watched it pretty early on, and I just loved it. I mean, like, there's just Academy Award-winning performances. The script is fantastic. I mean, I really can't think of many flaws with this whole movie. So it's really, I still love it, and I still watch it. I own it. I make people watch it all the time. And then they remade the movie in like 2000 something, yeah, where Ashton Kutcher was the white boyfriend or fiance going to the black family's home. I think Zoe, it was with Bernie Saldana, Mac, and Zoe yeah. Saldana was the fiance, and it, that was really funny, but not, it didn't quite carry the same emotional weight as Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but it is kind of funny. And you know, you kind of roll your eyes at it because it just was not kind of the same impact, but it was also really a funny little story if you want to watch
Bernie
that
Mac. It's Bernie Mac and Ashton Kutcher.
Yeah, Bernie Mac, yeah.
So it wasn't, do you know what I
mean? Exactly. Less serious.
Right.
Less serious. So, Yeah, let's get to talking.
All right. So I really like this movie. The one thing, I mean, like you said, you like it too. So for those of you who don't know, the movie is about this Joanna Drayton. Mm-hmm. She's on a vacation in Hawaii. She's 23. She comes home from her vacation, and she's like, I have a fiance now. His name is John Prentice, and mm-hmm. she brings him, and he's black and 37, mm-hmm. and he's a doctor, but he's a mm-hmm. doctor and a medical professor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so the movie basically follows, it's like a weekend even. Like, it's not really like a long time.
48 hours.
Yeah, basically. Seriously. Like,
1 day. Sorry, 24 hours.
24 hours. Okay. I was like, it's really not very, so it's not a very long time, but it's basically her family's reaction, her neighbor's reaction, their friend's reaction. Everyone has input on their relationship. And mm-hmm. rewatching it, I'm like, man, like, right, this is still a whole thing. Like, we know with mm-hmm. my dating history how things that, like, it's like, this is still a huge deal, you know, mm-hmm. With interracial couples. But I'm like, my issue now is, like, she's 23 and he's 37. Why is no one talking about that? I was like, she just graduated college and he's a whole doctor and professor.
He was married before and lost his wife and son died. Right. You know, it's like this whole thing.
Like, I was like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. But so like, rewatch, I was like, wait a minute, but he's old. Why is and that's Katherine Hepburn's niece played her daughter, correct?
I don't know, but sure.
You're like, yeah, that's fine. Yes, I was like, right? I was like, I don't know what, but anyway. So what was I gonna say? Oh, so it basically follows like everyone's reaction and everyone has input. And that's mm-hmm. really what it is. It's a whole lot of dialoguing mm-hmm. and face acting. So, but mostly dialogue.
But it's so good.
It is good. It's a really, here's the thing though. It's a really important conversation and it speaks a lot to the thing that's glaring about this is that Joanna's parents, Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn, those are not their real names, but the whole time mm-hmm. they were Spencer Tracy and Katherine Hepburn. Mm-hmm. They fashion themselves as liberals, right? Mm-hmm. And their daughter is marrying a black man because she was raised to believe in racial equality, mm-hmm. right? And I mean, you as a parent know this, and I'm sure my mom doesn't like things I do and how I do them, and she gets upset sometimes about, mm-hmm. you know, some choices I make. And I was like, but this is, you mm-hmm. literally raised me to be an independent thinker, and you raised mm-hmm. me, you know, like you raised me to be this way. And when I am this way, you're like, wait, that's not exactly the kind of way I want you to be. But, you know, and so it's like, okay, so I totally did that, but I think you misinterpreted what I meant.
Yeah.
So, and they fashion themselves as liberals. And that happens, I mean, that is real life. You know, mm-hmm. they're like, but wait, I totally believe in racial equality, but you totally brought this person home. You know, and it's just, here's the thing. There are more layers to this story than Joanna bringing John home and him mm-hmm. being black. There's so many layers and so many things that are forgotten. And I was once again heartbroken over the Tilly scene.
Yes.
So I should probably let you speak too, because I'm like talking about the whole thing.
Keep going.
So I was totally heartbroken over the Tilly scene. There's a scene in the movie where they have a maid and her name is Tilly. And she is opposed to the union. And her main reason for the opposition is that she believes that John is trying to marry above his station. And he's trying mm-hmm. to better himself. Like, he's using you because you're white. And he's gonna, you know, think he's more of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Joanna's like, Tilly, that's ridiculous. You know? And so and she's like, you know, I love you and you're just as black. Like, I don't get why this is wrong mm-hmm. or whatever. But it breaks my heart because that is very, like, that is still a thought that some people have. And it's like, people just can't believe in love for love's sake. Mm-hmm. They have to, like, there is a motive. And And she was like, oh yeah, no, he's trying to improve his station. You should marry him. And it's like, girl, what? You know? And it was, and it reminds you that well-meaning black folks can also be anti-black. Mm-hmm. And you forget about that. Like, it happens all the time. I know tons of anti-black people that don't realize they're anti-black. You know, they just believe that they are better for something or some way, you know? And so I was like, well, that doesn't really work. So I don't know. It just, it really broke my heart again. I was like, oh yeah. Oh, so then also it was really great to have a movie in the '60s where a black person is playing a doctor and we have a maid because balance. So
yeah, we don't have those movies now. Like, what happened to them?
Right, like, you know what I mean? It's like, right, I don't know, it's like now we're all thugs, but you know, it's cool. We're working on, or we're going to church in Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, as long as we don't start eating fried chicken and watermelon, like, I'm good the whole time.
There's something you want? No, I completely took all the. I took all the.
No, things. It's fine. That's great. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this is a super interesting movie because I've kind of since I've watched this the first time, read some of the articles, 30th anniversary, or watched the extra scenes and whatever, and I think it becomes an even more special movie when you read some of it, because the writers who put this film together. We're writing it so that basically when you come in and you have the couple together, you have Sydney Poitier and whatever her face is, Joanna, we'll just call her Joanna.
It is Catherine.
Catherine
Houghton.
So when you have them come in, they really made it so there's basically only maybe two or three objections to the marriage, which are totally reasonable. First, like the age difference. Second, that
they're not more upset about
everything is very fast, mm-hmm. right? That they met each other and basically a month later they're getting married and
10 days.
They're 10 days. Okay, so 10 days later, and they basically need to know in 24 hours if that's going to happen or not. And then the only other objection then would be his race, so that they had to really confront who they were and what they said they believed in. And along with that, you have Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, who are giving amazing performances. Spencer Tracy was literally dying, and they had been in this, you know, lifelong relationship. And so this was
their ninth movie together.
Movie ever, and their last movie together. And that last scene where he's giving the speech about, it's so beautiful. He talks about all the objections that everybody has thrown at him. And he said he only had problems with one. It's when Sidney Poitier's mom, the woman who plays him, says that he's forgotten what it's like to love someone passionately. And he says no. And you can just see the real emotion between him and Katharine mm-hmm. Hepburn in that scene. It's so beautiful because, you know, you can tell it's coming from a place of real truth and not just, obviously it's him acting, but it's a real truth. And I think that's lovely. As well as, you know, I love the scene between Sidney Poitier and his dad as well, where they talk about, his dad talks about how he was a postal worker. He said, I carried that bag for you to go to college and medical school, and now you have to do right by me, right? Like, you have to respect me. You have to do right by our race is kind of what he's saying, and you can't be doing this. And Sidney Poitier basically, like, says, no, you know, I did this so I could be a man, and I'm a man, and, like, and I'm not going to be weighed down by, like, the baggage of the past, basically. And I thought that was really interesting because I think oftentimes as black people in America, we live with our past in a particular way that we have to. You know, it's not like we can ignore what has happened in history. But at the same time, you know, like, the hope is that we don't have to be weighed down by that baggage, right? That the point is, like, let's why are we still having the same conversations we were having in 1875 after the Civil War? Like, we, those should be done now. We need to move on. Or in 1962 or whatever, you know, in 2019. And not to ignore that those are real and significant historical problems that require long-term solutions, but also to recognize that we in many cases define our own selves. I think also this movie speaks to me as a biracial person because, you know, this is sort of the story of the parents, you know, but as a child of an interracial marriage, it kind of helps me know where I came from, but also it's about redefining what it means to be of a particular culture, you know. I know people who say, you know, Black people should marry Black people because we need to have strong Black marriages, and, you know, there's certainly nothing wrong with strong Black marriages, but I've often felt in my life that I don't belong in any culture. You know, there's a lot of that, I think, when you are a bicultural person, whether it's to racial identities or maybe to people who are from two different, parents are from two different countries, whatever that is, that if you're not 100% something, then you're not anything, which I think is really interesting because I think one of the things I was reflecting on watching this movie is it makes it look like Black people and white people never got married before or never had babies before the 60s, you know, like it was never, you know, interracial marriages have been happening since the moment our country was founded, or since colonial times.
Right, but it wasn't, you know, always legal. Like,
it wasn't always legal, but and even, in many cases it was, you know, depending on where you lived and when and how, and mm-hmm. whatever. It wasn't common for sure, but certainly there are enough fair-skinned Black people out there that we know that's not the truth.
Yes. Like,
that's not the truth.
Thomas Jefferson's descendants.
Exactly.
They are legit Black.
Yeah. So, but especially as someone who doesn't look Black, it was hard, I think, growing up for me not being readily identified with my own culture that I identified fully with. But I think too that if we really want an interracial America, and I hate the word post-racial because that's not, like,
it doesn't exist.
We need to acknowledge our history. But if we really want an interracial America, like, we're going to have to accept that, like, it's going to look a little more brown than Black, white, and tan, mm-hmm. you know? We're going to all sort of be a little more mixed. And we already are all. Kind of going off on a tangent here from what I was originally trying to say.
You're getting into our secondary theme.
But that's cool. as I was watching this movie and thinking about what it meant to be the people in those relationships, whether it's parents accepting a couple themselves or whatever, I think that as a person who's from that third generation, I looked at it and said, like, yes, we need this movie, but we also now need the movie that says, like, what happens when we're all trying to be grandparents? What happens when we're all trying to be, to create a new family culture mm-hmm. when we come from maybe such different backgrounds and all of those things? And also to just admire the strength of character of all the people, all the characters in this, that all of them were extremely well-intentioned and nobody was attempting to, you know, make this out to be something easy, but they also didn't look at it as sort of the end of the world. And everyone was having open, honest conversations. And that allowed that final moment to be much more of a reconciliation than anything else, because it wasn't like, oh, we're all, you know, there was no glossing over anything, and we weren't all pretending to be something we weren't. It was like the first step to starting a new beginning, which was really great. The other scene that I like is when they go to meet her friends for a drink, and they're just hanging out like normal 20-year-olds. Like, you know, it's just like they have a drink and they get to know each other and that's it. It was kind of a nice break. And it's also really interesting to see, just to visually see that dynamic of like that generational change, because they didn't make too much out of that scene when they're meeting her, Joanna's friends, but it just was. And it was kind of a like, you know, here's a visual, here's what this scene is, and we're going to leave it here to show that there are many ways of reacting to this information when you're close to the person, you know. And I thought that was really interesting too. Okay, anything else?
I would be remiss if I did not mention that I love the enthusiasm of Monsignor Mike Ryan.
Oh, yes! I forgot about him.
Like, I was like, yeah. He was seriously, he was like, yeah, that's great! And yeah. It's funny because he was all excited and, you know, glad about it. But it's also one of those things, too, where I think I've experienced, like, the overexcitement of, like a white boyfriend, like meeting his friends, and you're like, oh my gosh, we're so excited to meet you. Like, yeah. Suddenly we are cool people. Yeah. I was like, it made me laugh because I knew that it was meant to be coming from a genuine place. Mm-hmm. But in my experience, where it's always just been like, oh, hi, it's so great to meet you, Marcia, who's black. Like, do you know what I mean? I thought it was super, super adorable. And I was yes. like, okay.
I like that he just is a very positive presence in the whole thing. Like, you know, that was a time when Catholic priests tended to be portrayed better in the media in general. Yes. But right, it wasn't like he was overreacting one way or the other. It was right. just like, well, yeah, let me help you. I'll marry him.
Yeah, no, right?
They're not even Catholic. No. I'll marry him.
Right? No. Which is always a thing, though. The Catholic Church, unless it was like, individual priests who have their own prejudice and bias, mm-hmm. maybe wouldn't marry interracial couples, but it was mm-hmm. like the Catholic Church definitely was like, yeah, let's do this. Mm-hmm. Like, always, because it's always like, no, no, no. Like, everyone gets to get married. You know, yep. every man and woman gets to get married in the Catholic yeah. Church. We have to make that stipulation.
Like, we have to make that clear.
I know. We have to make that clear. That's how the cookie crumbles, y'all. And so, what was I going to say? Oh, that was it. That was all I had to say about Monsignor Mike Ryan and Catholic Church always being like, yes, you know, interracial marriage is just fine. So, mm-hmm. and you kind of start to get just to talk about, you were raised with your mom and dad were an interracial couple, mm-hmm. and now you and your husband are, yeah. even though like you have to tell people that you're black.
Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's okay, I'm black.
One of my favorite stories has to be a time when a mutual friend of Marcia and I, we worked with in ministry, we were at a conference together, and it was on multi-ethnic parishes, intercultural ministry, and so we were talking about stuff, and I said at one point, they were talking about, you know, first-generation immigrants, second-generation, just differences between, you know, people coming from different cultures. And I kind of talked about, asked a few questions along the lines of, like, what about intercultural stuff? Because obviously I had a personal interest of intercultural couples and seeing if there had been research done and all that, which, shocker, not a ton. although more now. But, I kind of prefaced with, like, people are always asking me my ethnic background. You know, they think basically anything you could possibly come up with that's not, like, straight off the boat from Africa or Asia, they basically think that it's me. So, so I was just saying, you know, sharing that, my family background. And this person came up to Marcia later and she was like, oh my gosh, Marcia just, and she goes, I just found out and Shannon shared with us that she was biracial. Like it was a big secret.
But
and now her, I can let it out.
Oh no, no, no. She came, she was like, so Shannon is black. I was like, yes. She's like, so you, she's like, so you knew that. I go, I've known Shannon for years. I was like, I met Shannon's dad first. So yes, I knew. And like, and it's because you were in college when we met, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, no, I was like, no, I did. She's like, yeah, she, you know, and then she was like it was brave of you. It's just like, she shared with us. I was like,
I mean, sometimes when I'm in a room full of white people, it might be a brave thing to do.
Right? But no, it was,
I'm at the Klan rally.
Right.
To myself.
But no, and I loved it because she was like, wow, like, because she had no idea. And I thought that she, you know, like, it's probably, she's like, oh, I had no idea. But other people didn't have any idea either. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess maybe they won't, but, you know, whatever. And so, but no, it was so funny to me because I love it. She was just like, wow. And I think it was like, I didn't know that. And I think she was also like, I didn't even think to know that. So, but no, I laugh about it all the time. Not at her, because she's amazing and great. Like, shout out to our friend. She knows who she is. No, I don't want to like put her on blast on this podcast, but no, she's legit a whole great person who always had our amazing backs. Like, always.
Really amazing.
Always.
So, I think it's worth talking about, I have no idea what we're talking about before we started that story, but it was a good one, so we had to tell it. But you know what, we thought that this was a really good time to talk. We haven't explicitly talked about race in a podcast yet, and I thought, you know, this was a good movie to talk about that, because, you know, we could talk about interracial marriage, we could talk about all of the things directly in the movie, but I think it's worth talking about race and how we have experienced it individually, and also, you know, what it means for us as people of faith in particular. So, Marcia, any thoughts? I'm sure I could talk for an hour. So,
well, so my first, I want to say, real experience with race and understanding race, and, when I could understand relationships, I was wondering, like, not like really like, you know, in depth, because I still don't understand. But when I was 8 years old, my mom had my little sister. She had my little sister, Joey. And Joey is mixed race. So her Joey's dad's white. And he'd been in my life since I was five, you know. So it just was what it was, you know. And so I didn't think about it being bad or good or whatever, but it wasn't until we were all at the zoo, and people said some horrible things to my mom and Tom, because my mom is pregnant, that she's walking, and we're all, oh my gosh, you know what I did? So I didn't realize this was a bad thing. So they're at the zoo, I remember this, and my mom, like, we all thought my mom was pregnant with twins. She actually was for a while, but Joey absorbed her, so that happened. But anyway, just isn't that weird how that happens? Anyway, so we were walking, and, like, people made some comments, you know, whatever. But I can't remember if it was before or after my comment. So Tom used to always joke around that my mom's having two zebras because they were black and white. And so, right? And so we were at the zoo. Now, so here we go. At the zoo. Looking at zebras, and you would think I'm old enough to know, like, don't say weird stuff, but no. I wasn't, and I was like, Mom, they're zebras, like, you're pregnant with zebras.
And so,
right, so so she, like, Tom even went as far as to get my mom this shirt that she wore all the time that had two zebras on it.
That's great.
But anyway, As we were saying, so it was like, that was, it was normal to me from like forever, you know, like mm-hmm. Since I was five, this man's been in my life. And, but the people around them had a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that, like, even his family, they're not listening to this podcast anytime soon, but even his family, had a problem with it. You know, it was really hard. They were going to get married and then that didn't happen because it was so difficult. Like how Sidney Poitier was like, you know what, if you guys can't be okay on board with this, then I'm just going to call it off.
Yeah.
Right. How he made that call. And it's like, I understand that call. Excuse mm-hmm. me. Because just the emotional turmoil of constantly having to defend your spouse's race or be mm-hmm. defended or having to be like fighting to be seen as a whole person in the eyes of people mm-hmm. that the person you're married to loves, like, you know, and it's hard. And that did like wear on them and they're not together. And, you know, and, he was still a huge part of my childhood. So I still, you know what I mean? Like I still think about that and how, and that was my real, I think that was probably, looking back, was probably my first ever lesson in race and what mm-hmm. race is and what that is. Cause, mm-hmm. And that's actually kind of difficult for, you know, to think about, like, oh, so this is bad because of this. I was mm-hmm. like, but he makes the best grilled cheese sandwiches and has the funniest voices. Mm-hmm. Why is this bad? Just like, so even now it's, I mean, it's different now, but it was mm-hmm. just one of those things that we constantly, had. And so that was, and then even over time, like since the time I recognized that, there hasn't been a time in my life that I haven't been confronted by my race or confronted about it or, you know, being a part of an everyday conversation. That's because race is huge. People will say, I don't like to think about race or I don't like to do this. And I was like, mm-hmm. then you're not living in this world, you know, mm-hmm. like as it is. And it's really strange, you know, for people to say like, I don't think about race or race doesn't affect me. And it's like, are you a white male? Okay.
Yeah.
but it does, it affects every aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. It affects every aspect mm-hmm. of my life even.
Yeah. And I think it affects, especially white people in ways that they don't necessarily recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, I live in a world of white privilege. I look white. I quote unquote, according to white people, sound white, quote unquote, act white, right? Whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Generally, it just means educated.
Which is so gross.
Quote unquote. And so when I walk into a store, when I'm anywhere, no one looks at me oddly, unless maybe I'm walking into the soul food restaurant and ordering like gizzards. And then they're like, this is why we eat gizzards. You know? So no, I'm not, but
let me share with you.
But then like 5 minutes later, they're like, you know, how do you know about this place? And I'm like, well, I'm biracial. And they're like, oh, okay, now we know why you're here, you know. Like,
usually, and like, usually followed by, I knew you were something.
Like, you know, why were you in the black neighborhood? I was like, maybe I live here. They're like, no, you don't live here. Fine, whatever, I know I don't, but still. So like, but I experience that in a way that's different than most people who also look, who are white and are not biracial, because they don't recognize that that's not the case for the majority of people of color, you know, that is not how they experience the world. You know, I once had a friend tell me, we were talking about the 2016 election, and I was talking, at the time I lived in rural Indiana, and there were a bunch of Confederate flags coming out in ways that I had never seen before. Like, you know, Indiana, you'll see an occasional Confederate flag, bumper sticker, stuff like that, because it is predominantly white. And this is where the Klan revived, mm-hmm. The modern Klan. But
too far from
for the
where
most
I
part,
lived.
It wasn't something that was overt until recently. And we've seen kind of this new wave of white nationalism happening. And I was just telling her about, I was actually, me and a few friends, we were actually intimidated by somebody who was driving by in a truck covered in Confederate flags, had a giant Confederate flag in the back, and he would just drive through town slowly staring at people. and it was very menacing.
Yeah,
I mean, and I mean, I was literally frozen in fear. This is how it happened to me a few times. And he came through during the town festival and a bunch of other stuff. He would come by the bar on Saturday nights and stuff. And I've certainly experienced that sort of fear in relation to race before, especially when I've been around my family, but never in a way that was so immediate, you know, that it was like, okay, we need to know where the exits are and all that sort of stuff. And I remember relaying this to my friend who was white, and she's like, oh man, I never even noticed. And I was just like, what a privilege. You know, I know a lot of people hate hearing that word, but what a privilege it is to be able to not notice. Because I can guarantee you that any person of color noticed immediately and started to look and try to understand what was going on and assess the situation. Because we know that you have to be careful, right? It's there, you never know. You know, certainly most people feel safe, but there are just moments that you're aware of that. And I think that that's a way that... that's one example of a way that I've experienced that in a different way. You know, the looks that I got going into a store with my mother versus with my father, you know, when he was the only parent with me as the black parent, were all different. Were the looks that they got together, people who would walk by us in a restaurant and we're just sitting there eating as a family in this town that I grew up in. I mean, we knew we were there from when it was small and we knew tons of people. I still know tons of people. I just walk around my town when I go home now and I see people I know all the time because I lived there for, you know, all of my life. And just to experience that, you know, obvious racism, that most people didn't even notice, was always really frustrating. And then to be told things like, you know, when I was in high school, I was in the top 10% of my class and I went to a top 20 university and all these things. And I was told by friends that the only reason I got into those schools was because I was black. You know, and I've heard people say terrible things about affirmative action and they feel like they can say those things to me because I look white and like it's okay to say them to me because I'll understand. And I'm like, no, even as recently as this year, I've had people say things that are basically along the lines of like, well, black people are bad, but your dad is okay because he's like us, like, or he believes the things that we believe.
People and I'm like, say that to me.
And yeah, I'm sure they have. And like, you know, those are things we don't talk about and they're still happening. This is 2019. They're still happening. And we sort of pretend like as long as everybody just says, oh, I'm not really racist, that we can pretend like race isn't a thing. Yeah, and I'm sure I could say much more. I'm sure you could say much more.
Right, I know. And it's just a lot of things that you say, I'm like, with just now what you were saying, how people feel they can say anything they want in front of you. I think that people forget that I'm black too, even though, like, I'm dark. Like,
you are dark.
I'm dark. Like, I was like, I know, I buy foundation for myself. I know what my skin tone is. And because I quote unquote sound white, which is when people say that to me, they go, oh, but you sound white. And I say, no, thank you. And they're like, wait, what? And I go, you just said something incredibly racist. And they were like, ooh, right? And I, or like black people would say it to me all the time. Oh, you just want to be white, don't you? And I was like, I don't. I would freak out if I woke up tomorrow morning and I was suddenly white. I was like, I would be splotchy. I couldn't wear all the colors I wanted. I can wear any color I want. I look so good in all the colors.
I know you do because you have that base skin. I can't wear yellow. I cannot. I would look sick. I would look jaundiced.
It's like, what happened to Shannon? She's fine. She just was wearing yellow. No. So, but no, I, but it happens all the time where people think they can say things to you, or I've known for a good chunk of my life, I was a lot of people's gateway black. Right. So I don't know if I've shared this story on here before, and I don't know if I'm sure I've told you this story. When I was in seventh grade, I went to a Catholic school, which, you know, it's great, and I had a good time there, and I still have like friends there. Like, I mean, friends that I've made from that time. Mm-hmm. And one of us, we're probably gonna go on a trip together. I was like, you know, just that's our life. But so in seventh grade, I went to this school, befriended a girl, and it was great and it was fine. And for eighth grade, though, I was told I couldn't come back. And I was really confused by this because the mom decided, like, I am super outgoing, in case the listeners can't figure that out. And, you know, I'm me.
Shocking.
And, right? And I may speak a few decibels above what is appropriate. So she decided that I was wild, right? She's like, oh, she's wild. Like, I knew when Kate friended that black girl that we couldn't do anything about, like, told the principal of the school this, told the principal of school that I was wild, that I was bad for the reputation of the school. She made up a story that the principal believed, because of her own bias, that I had propositioned her husband. Because, you know, black girls are wild and promiscuous. I was 11,
overly sexualized.
Right? Mm-hmm. And, like, I was 12. I was 12. And, like, made up this...
You probably weren't even thinking about that yet.
Right? I was literally in your daughter's basement playing a Cookie Monster record. Like, as a joke. And so, like, it was just this whole thing where she decided something about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, based on her biases and based on what she interpreted of my behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I know what it was, because she felt like I was, because I always talked to her husband. I go, I've always been raised to make conversation with and talk to adults. Like, I'm very good with adults. You know what I mean? And her husband and I talked about all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, like, not like on the drives to school or to the mall. Like, no one wanted to sit in the front seat, and I was like, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, do you know what I'm talking? So that kind of how that happened, and... So these, with all of this, like, I was told I couldn't come back to the school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were other factors too. Like we had like financial aid, and they're like, no, we're going to pull it because your daughter doesn't have a place here. They're like, oh, we'll take your other daughter, but we can't take her. Like, based on all of this, right? People, and like, completely wrecked my education.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I grew up in Chicago. Public school is not what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I ended up going to a different Catholic school,
mm-hmm.
which was a whole nother story. But, so, like, that was what it was. And for the whole time, I didn't know what it was. My mom assumed it was one thing. We didn't understand until years later when we crossed paths with that principal again. And the principal, like, I don't know what, like, she approached my mom, and she basically confessed to my mom what happened and told her that she was so sorry that this happened. You know what I mean? Like, all these things happened. It was a whole thing. And my mom's like, are you even kidding me? Like, I was in high school when I found out that this was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And just because I was black, like, she already made up her mind that she didn't like me. But she decided to use my personality and what she wanted to interpret it as to make up facts and the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And it really did affect me. You know, like, there's... And it's so crazy because I think about, like, seventh grade was such a huge turning point in a lot of the things in my life and the things that shaped me, just of those experiences. And then me leaving that school and everything that happened after, you know, that, like, I was like... Oh my gosh, like, you really just, I mean, it's not, I mean, like, I'm fine, like, I'm good, like, we're all good, I'm here making a podcast, making people laugh and love me, you know, it's great, but I'm not trying to steal your husband, am I, Shannon? No.
No.
So
you guys would not do well together.
We would not, oh my gosh. I believe he would kill me first before I killed him. He'd be like, no, stop.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah.
But no, so it's just when I think about that, I am really, I'm like where my life is now. It's like it wouldn't have been where it was if she didn't do that. But I also mm-hmm. wouldn't have had a few hardships that I had if she hadn't done that. Do you know? And it's kind of like, it's so mm-hmm. crazy the power, like race is huge. So when people say they don't mm-hmm. see race or don't understand race, I go, you literally like set off to like wreck a 12-year-old's life because she was mm-hmm. black. You like, isn't mm-hmm. that the craziest thing ever?
Yep.
So, and it's,
it happens every day.
It that's happens what really all the makes. Time.
We just don't hear the stories. And I think that's one thing that I've, really confronted a lot with people in my life in the past probably 5 to 10 years with Black Lives Matter and a lot of things getting out on the internet more, like you know, we had that kind of string where people were taking videos of white people calling the cops on black people just because they were in a public place where mm-hmm. they didn't want them to be or whatever. Those are things that have happened to black people forever. Forever.
Yeah, it's happened to me.
In America, since America started. And like, just because they weren't seen by the majority of white people doesn't mean they weren't happening. And now that we're seeing these, it's not like black people are making this up or people are saying like, oh, well, this is now happening more. It's not. It's probably happening less because now people know that they can be on camera.
Yeah.
Like that has been very empowering to people of color and marginalized groups in general, to have, you know, the internet and phones on, you know, with cameras and all of these things, mm-hmm. because it allows us as individual people to have more power and more voice. And that's why I'm not like a person who's like, get rid of technology. Like people who are like, oh, smartphones are the devil. I'm like, no, like they have empowered so many people, whether it's people living in countries that have oppressive regimes or people who are just marginalized in our society. It allows them to finally have a voice, and we've become a more democratic society because of it. So that's a different topic for a different day.
I know, right? I was like, this is such a broad topic.
Yeah. The one other thing I wanted to say, well, I kind of wanted to say two things. One, living as a person who's in a, both my own life is trying to figure out what it means to be bicultural. And I mean that every day I'm trying to figure out what does it mean to be a biracial person, raising kids who are, you know, really not biracial, even though they are, like they're living pretty much as white kids. Like,
they don't, and
trying to distill all that I want to about being, about their history and their family, to them. But also living, of course, with a spouse who is, you know, white and comes from his own cultural backgrounds. You know, it's not like he's like monocultural. He's got German and Irish, or not Irish, Italian, and all sorts of things going on in his own life that he's, you know, trying to meld. I think that's one thing that we ignore about ourselves is that we're all multicultural. Like, we're all mm-hmm. trying to figure out it, all of it. You know, I think one of the things I was reflecting on is that, like, it's just funny that, you know, we don't often think of ourselves in terms of our interracial couple, but there are just moments where it comes out where I'm like, oh, don't you know this song? Like, I found out the other day he had never seen Friday. He has not seen the movie Friday. And I'm like, no.
Oh, my gosh. You know,
or like, there were just like songs that I would reference or things I would reference that he just had no idea because he's a white man from, you know, like a white family, or like things that we grew up eating or whatever that I would just be like, yeah, this is how you make this. And he'd be like, I've never had this before in my life. Or like we'd go to the soul food restaurant and Eric loves, he's a great eater. Like he'll eat any cultural food. He'll eat basically anything. Is it, you know, seafood, land, vegetarian. We've gone vegetarian before. He embraces that. He likes spicy food. Funny story, the other day he works at a school that's predominantly Mexican and they made food for them for Teacher Appreciation Week, which is this week. And he grabbed a big jalapeno and they were all the moms were so very concerned that Mr. Schmidt was about to eat this jalapeno and didn't know what he was getting into, that it was too spicy for him. And he's just sitting there slicing it, like, eating it. And they're like, oh my gosh, he actually can handle it. Like, that's Eric. Like, he's just going to do that kind of stuff. But even like there'll be times when we, you know, go somewhere and I'll be like, oh yeah, you should try this. And he'll be like, what is that? And I'm like, oh my God, you don't know these things. You know, they just come out, it comes out in weird ways. And then, you know, like navigating both of our families' understandings of what race is also tied up in that too. Especially more so when I'm talking about our white family rather than the black side. But, you know, that's been an interesting thing too. The other thing I wanted to say along with that is, kind of going back to the story you told earlier about our friend from, you know, that conference on ministry. I will say this with honesty and openness and love for the church. The church is oftentimes the place where I experience the most racism, than any other institution. And it's really sad because I love the church so much. And like, we have had black Catholics from the time of Jesus. We have an Ethiopian eunuch who's baptized, you know, days after Jesus is ascended in heaven and days after Pentecost. But the church has been a tool for oppression in so many ways. And that is really sad for me. On the other hand, there have been so many champions of equality in the church too, that we can't overlook that. And I'm not trying to say the church has always been bad.
But we can't say one without the other. We have to acknowledge that.
Yeah, exactly. But,
believe me, I know. You know,
oftentimes it takes radical, heroic leadership in the church to overcome these biases. And we still experience them now. You know, if you were to ask most black Catholics whether they felt welcome in the Catholic Church as a whole, I think they would probably say sort of, you know, like maybe in my parish, but, you know, this doesn't feel this way. You know, the church has embraced other cultures in a way that's never embraced black Catholics. Mm-hmm. You know, I think often of our Hispanic brothers and sisters who we love having in the church, like come to us. We love you.
All day long. Stay in love church. Your masses.
We need you. Our you know, Guadalupe. Thank God they're making us more intercultural. But they experience acceptance and they are cared for in ways that I don't think most black Catholics have been or will be. And I think that's a real challenge to the church to be a forerunner in this discussion in our time. And I think the bishops have tried to do that, but I think so often on our parish, in our parishes, in our pews, that's not the reality. You know, and racism is not a political issue. It's an issue of justice and of doing what's mm-hmm. right. Like, you can't just be like, oh, it's fine for there to be this as a Catholic person.
And racism is not pro-life.
Racism is not pro-life, and that's what the bishop said, so you can look it up if you want some authority behind that.
Boom. I'm enough authority, thank you.
Yeah, of course, we are. You know, we know exactly everything that's Catholic, so you should just listen to us.
Oh, God. You'd be doomed. Listen to Shannon. She literally has a master's.
Yeah, well, I do. Not officially yet, but yes, I do.
Right.
That'd be...
No, but, so yes. And that, like, I was in seventh grade at a Catholic school. And so I get mm-hmm. it. And we have to remember that people aren't perfect because
yeah,
it's just, people are used to their things. Like I do have an issue with race in the Catholic Church sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I feel that, people, when I'm at Mass, if I'm at a church visiting and people are like, there's a black person here, right? And they're like looking at me like, whoo, she's one of us. And I think
she knows all the words,
right? She knows all the words. And I think that I'm approachable to people because mm-hmm. I sing at Mass, you know, like I'm sitting, mm-hmm. I got my book in the pews with them and then at the sign of peace or whatever, like, oh, you know, it was great hearing you sing. And they can mm-hmm. open that dialogue with me. But that mm-hmm. they found something to talk to me about. But I feel like mm-hmm. other people who are black and Catholic in the church don't feel that type of welcoming. It's like, mm-hmm. it's almost as if without them realizing it, I had to prove myself before mm-hmm. there was an interaction. I will never forget the first weekend in my church that I start working in Terre Haute. I helped be the Eucharistic minister. I was like, oh, you had someone not show up, I can do it. And they're like, are you sure? And I go, I know how to be a Eucharistic minister. Like, just tell me where to stand. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally, just tell me where to stand, right? And so I had that cup, and it was a smaller parish, and I will never forget it, because I'd seen this couple again, but the husband and wife came up, they got, you know, the host from the priest, and I'm sitting there with my chalice. The wife starts to walk up to me to get it, and the husband yanks her away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yanks her away and keeps walking. And I was like, what just happened? You know, and then,
yeah.
And then later on that year, well, that school year, so in April, another parishioner at a different church got really upset with me. And it was, like, irrational how upset about confirmation. Everyone's super godly during confirmation, so I don't know what the problem is. But irrationally upset, and it was to the fact that I told my priest, I go, I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to be in a room with him. I don't want to talk to him. I don't want to have a meeting with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't understand what the issue was. He's like, we can just resolve this. And I go, I don't think that we can. This is not an issue with me. Like, it is not an issue with Marcia, right? Mm-hmm. And it was... he just didn't like that I was telling him what for, you know what I mean? Like, no, this has to be done, or, you know, whatever. So, and that was it. And later my priest approached me later and he goes, I didn't realize, he goes, looking back, he goes, he was being racist to you, wasn't he? And I go, he absolutely was. And he said, oh my gosh, he goes, and the way you handled it was so wonderful. Like, you didn't, accuse him of it. You just you just stated this, and you did this. And I was like, I've been doing this a long time, you know? Uh-huh. And he's like, I can't believe it. He goes, please tell me if any of my other parishioners do anything that's racist. And I go, And I go, oh, you don't have time in your day.
No.
And he's like, what? And I go, This is an ongoing thing. I go, this has been the most overt in a while, but this is where we are. And he had to sit with that, and he had to realize that, you know, and it's, even though sometimes I can't stand to educate people all the dang time, because I've got other things to do with my life, you know, like sleep and eat Skinny Pop, but but it's important when people are ready to learn that you're open. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm open to educating someone who's ready for it. Otherwise I'm just yelling into, like, the great beyond, you know, just yelling into the distance, like, rah, rah, rah. So, I mean.
And one thing I will say that I do appreciate about experiencing white privilege as a biracial person, it sounds really weird saying that, but it's going to make sense in a minute, is that I have a platform to help people acknowledge race in a way that other black people cannot, because I am, you know, like, I look like everyone who might be in a room full of white people. I as a biracial person, I understand what it means to be white. You know, like, I come from an Irish family. I've got all that, you know, like, Germans, we've got all that. I know what their culture is. And so I can speak to that because I'm very culturally fluent, as are almost all, you know, all black people are basically culturally fluent with being white, because we live in a white world. and I've been able to confront and bring attention to situations in a way that oftentimes even friends of mine or people, colleagues I've worked with, have not been able to in predominantly white institutions, to get them changed. And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I can use my privilege to help others. And I think that's really kind of the takeaway, is that, like, we know that race isn't going to change in America overnight. If it would, wouldn't that be the best?
Oh my gosh, but, right? I would have access to better healthcare.
Yeah, everything.
I would have everything. That would be amazing. I wonder if there's a magic pill. I wonder if we can put something, we should pump something in the water to make that happen. Pretty sure that's a crime. But but, you know, the end justifies the means. Way to be Machiavellian.
No
Machiavelli. No Nicolai Machiavelli.
Sound advice. So I think that's the is that we, those of us who are in positions of privilege, whatever it is, educational privilege, financial, racial, whatever privilege we have, we are able to build up people who are marginalized, people who are oppressed, people who need our help, and that we don't sit back and allow other people to continue to let the world be as it is. Yeah, because we can, and that's how the world changes every day. I mean, like, to give an example, there were people in Eric's family just two generations ago who would refuse to eat food that was prepared by Black people, like at a restaurant, and who would use the N-word freely and all of those things. And two generations later, he married me, right? Like, yeah. Where, you know, it would be abhorrent to some people for that to be a reality, no matter what I look like, right? Because blood is the thing for them, right? If you have one drop of blood, then that makes you whatever.
Shannon, I think they were just tired of eating nasty, unseasoned food.
What?
I think they were just tired of eating nasty, unseasoned food.
That's fair.
I mean, you're lovely and all. Yeah. I just think it was like, you know what? Let me have some seasoning.
So, and there were people in my own family who had very similar views. So I'm not just trying to say it's all like one family or whatever. But like, it's just a testament to how things can change and that people's choices, you know, like the choices his parents made and how they raised him, that, you know, like I admire so much of who they are, that they raised such a wonderful person, you know, that those things can change overnight, or not overnight, but over time. And if we keep at it and we keep trying to make the world a better place, it will get there eventually. We may not see it, mm-hmm. but we'll get there, right? Like Dr. King.
Yes.
Someday we're going to get to that mountaintop.
Yeah. R.I.P. Okay. I know. I'm such a dork. Okay, so that was a whole lot. That was a whole lot. Started by Sidney Poitier and Company. Okay, so moving forward, what are you looking forward to the rest of the week?
Like I said, I'm looking forward to traveling. To see my in-laws. I really enjoy spending time with them, so I'm very excited about that. I am also looking forward to my graduation, which is in 2 weeks. I should be getting my cap and gown. I'll tell you more about that when we come to it.
Yeah,
but
I was like, what?
I'm just so excited because I get a whole weekend and just to like celebrate something I've accomplished. So
awesome.
It feels good.
Cool. It feels good. Awesome. So something I'm looking forward to is something that we have been anticipating a while. Is that maybe one day Shannon and I will get to meet our new nephew. Our nephew Archie. The royal baby has been born.
But it's not my choice.
What'd you say?
I said, I don't like that name, by the way, but it's not my choice.
You know what's so funny? Like, I don't know why people don't like it. And I was like, it's probably Archibald, but I think Archie is a darling name.
Yeah.
Very
British.
But it is Archie Harrison, Mountbatten, Windsor.
Yeah.
And it's, I found out today why the Mountbatten, because I didn't know that that's Prince Philip's last name.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, duh, because it has to be Windsor no matter what. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's but I was like, oh, so they're all Mountbatten Windsor. Like, and mm-hmm. you know, I didn't know that. So
not the heirs. They're just Windsors.
Oh, the heirs. Really?
Yeah.
Ah. So but everybody else who's not an heir is Mountbatten mm-hmm. Windsor. So all the mm-hmm. grandkids pretty much. Well, no.
Yeah. Not Prince Charles and then his
and William.
Prince William and George. are all Windsors.
Okay, but everyone else is Mountain Baton Windsor. Okay, cool. That's cool. Good to know. let's see. So yeah, we're excited. You know, looking forward to meeting him one day.
Full baby.
Mm-hmm. Once we will, and we'll show you proof once I learn about Photoshop. That's something else that I am looking forward to. I was trying to think, oh yeah, by the time you listen to this, we will be 3 days away from the Game of Thrones finale. So
yeah!
We will know how it all ends and
yes.
who wins the throne.
Yeah, that might take that. Half an hour to talk about on the following podcast.
Right. No, so I texted Shannon on Monday and I was like, you need to call me when you pick up the kids so that we can talk about Game of Thrones. Because all we do is send each other tweets, like literally screenshot the tweets.
Memes.
And all the memes and all that stuff, like everything. I did. And I send you like Twitter links. I was like, I must just send you stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great. So yeah, so we have a lot that we're looking forward to. And we want to know what you guys are looking forward to. Also, what you guys thought about the movie, Guess Who's Coming for Dinner. Mm-hmm. So please make sure to email us at plaitskirtsandbasicblack@gmail.com or even post under our Instagram under this post about this episode, if I remember to do it. I will, I promise. I can't promise things. I shouldn't promise things that I can't. And let us know what you're thinking. And now it's our favorite time of the podcast, the offertory. Woohoo! I'm going to start with my recommendations today.
So I am recommending first a movie on Netflix. It's a teen rom-com called The Perfect Date. It was just a delightful little lighthearted movie, and I recommend that one. I am also recommending going to, if you are in the Midwest, the Warren Dunes. It's a lovely place right on Lake Michigan, or if you're not in the Midwest, just anywhere that has water.
You know, it's really fun to explore the sand and be on the lake and everything, so my recommendation is sun, sand, and water, and sunscreen, because I, you know, no matter how dark you are, you need sunscreen. You don't want skin cancer.
Because you have skin.
Yeah.
My gosh, people don't understand that.
And one of the, and then my third recommendation to go along with that is Rihanna's Fenty Beauty line, the foundation. Wonderful. As a biracial woman who needs at least two foundations, one for winter, one for summer when I get tan, Rihanna has all the colors.
Awesome. Yeah, she's got like, 41 shades or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. It's great. First, speaking of getting to Yale, my baby cousin got into Yale, right? And he got a scholarship. Like, it was like, wait, you actually got to Ivy League and got a scholarship for Ivy League?
Oh my God.
Okay. No, he's so great. He was super excited. But yeah, isn't that amazing?
That's
like,
awesome.
I was like, that's right. So yay. Yay for my cousin Armonte. We call him Monty. Yay. Okay, so my offerings are, first thing, speaking of interracial dating, there is this series of books by Jasmine Guillory. They're adorable romance novels. Like, they're so adorable. They're like beach reads. Mm-hmm. Like, you can read them in like 3 hours, maybe four. Like, sweet. Check them out from the library. So her name is Jasmine Guillory. Like, she's a lawyer and she decides to write these books. But the first one is called The Wedding Date. You've seen that one? It's so good. Like, and then the second one is The Proposal, which was part of Reese Witherspoon's book club previously.
Nice.
So it's kind of it's not the sequel. It's in the same universe, right? Mm-hmm. Like some of the characters from The Wedding Date are in the Proposal. So it's one of those things where you don't have to read one or the other. Well, actually, you probably should read The Wedding Date first and then read The Proposal second. So, okay. And then there's going to be another one, which is The Wedding Party, which is coming out in July. So sweet. I think it's just a trilogy, like a cute little, and it's written by a black woman. And it's about like black women dating white men, like just kind of how it happens. And I was like, whoa.
Uh-oh.
And it's really cool. Like it's super, they're adorable reads, like so adorable. So just so you know, and also, the second recommendation I have are adult coloring books, because They're really mm-hmm. great and soothing and wonderful. So get some adult coloring books and, like, coloring books for adults. How about I just say that? Coloring books for adults.
Grown ups.
Mine has flowers. I have a Doctor Who one and a Harry Potter one. Just saying. And the next thing I want to recommend is Rachel Held Evans. Anything by Rachel Held Evans. Rachel Held Evans actually passed away May 4th, I believe. She got sick
this weekend.
And then she hadn't gotten an infection, and then she slipped into a coma, and it was all this stuff happened. And for those of you who don't know, she's really, really important in the evangelical world, and like she's a biblical scholar, and she has critics and praises. She gets critiques and praises for kind of turning, I want to say, like, white evangelicalism on its head, you know?
Yeah.
Just basically explaining, like, hey, there was one thing that she said. It was so perfect that she says is, whatever you're looking for, you'll find it in the Bible. She's like, if you want to find a reason to be racist, you'll find it in the Bible. If you want to find a reason to be forgiving, you'll find it in the Bible. Do you know what I mean? Like, everything, our good inclinations and our bad inclinations, like, we will find it in the Bible. So it makes us, like, really search our hearts, too. And it's just, it was really a beautiful, she passed away. She had a husband, and she had two children. And one, like, there's just a baby, right? I'm pretty sure that it's just a baby. And it's really, I know so many people that are so torn up about this. Like, it's really, just being an outspoken woman in Christianity, like, she's such a good, you know, she really paved the way a lot for, you know, for that. And so anything by her would be really great. And may she rest in peace. So, yeah, you guys, thank you so much for, this was a lot. Like, I felt like we were like.
And we talked about a lot of stuff.
We talked.
Really important stuff.
Right? And I was like, we still have more to talk about. But we're going to be on a lighter note next week, hopefully, with all that. So next week we want you to tune in as we talk about our favorite American girl. She's actually not my favorite American girl, but the black one. We're going to be talking about American Girl Addie, and we're going to be reading the book Meet Addie. So go to your library and see if you can find it. I'm going to have to do the sign off because my computer just died and we lost Shannon. We're going to be talking about Addie, the American girl. So we hope you enjoyed our discussion, and please continue the discussion on Instagram and/or Twitter, where you can follow us at PSBB Podcast on both of those. You can also email us at platskirtsandbasicblack@gmail.com. You can follow me at StylishlySia on Instagram and Twitter, and you can follow my wonderful co-host, who I've literally left in the dark, at Team Quarter Black on Instagram. That's Team Quarter, like the coin, or, you know, 1/4 black on Instagram. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you guys for always being so amazing, and we will, shout out to Jazar, who sings Seas of Mars, the song that you know that you're jamming out to. And Shannon is somewhere once I get a hold of her again. You guys have a great week, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.